everyone, and welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation, and I'm here with Tristan Vick. How's it going, Tristan?
Oh, just another day in one of the craziest countries on Earth. How are you?
I think it could get a little crazier, but...
I think tomorrow it will. We're recording on Wednesday night, so if you hear this, that means all the servers in the world have not exploded just yet, but you never know.
Podcast hyperbole for you there.
So yeah, speaking of podcasts, the Tony Kornheiser show that I listen to, they do it in a restaurant, and they're talking about how during the Watergate hearings, people used to watch the Watergate hearings at bars and stuff during the day, and they would offer there's like three or four cocktails that have been created as a result of the Watergate hearings at bars where people would go to watch them. Especially when it was like really busy, big days or big witnesses, you know? Mm-hmm. And their restaurant's offering drink specials, and they're going to have the hearing on like half their TVs tomorrow.
Interesting.
So it is becoming going quite full circle now. I mean, people are encapsulated by it, or raptured, whatever the word is. By this hearing tomorrow.
We'll go with enamored. Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit about soccer. It's been a busy week for FC Dallas. And at the end of this episode, we've got an interview with Steve Davis from FC Dallas TV and ESPN Soccer Today. He's been around the soccer scene here in Dallas for quite some time, knows his stuff, and is not afraid to share his opinions. So, stick around for that. But first, let's talk a little bit about that big road win in Vancouver.
Yeah, it was huge. Picked up the 2 points, got a 2-1 win over the Whitecaps. And we ended, 3 points. Ended up with the Vancouver coach, Carl Robinson, got fired yesterday? I think it was today. And there was a lot of talk on the postgame show kind of about how Vancouver hasn't really lived up to much since he's been brought on, and whether or not this is his final season. And they were kind of saying it was, but they thought he would at least be able to see the season out. And they went ahead and fired him with them. I think it's like 5 matches left in the regular season. So that's Vancouver's takeaway. Our takeaway was, I thought that we really capitalized on the tactical mistakes and issues that Vancouver had. You looked at a guy like Alphonso Davies going to Bayern Munich and tons of speed. He really worked really well down the flanks. And I thought he was going to go down the left quite a bit, down our left, his right, quite a bit to work on Pedroso, who's still getting into that match fitness after being brought in midseason. But for whatever reason, I guess because he's not a good coach or something, they switched him back over to the left. They kind of moved him around where Reggie kind of stepped up and tried to play well. And I mean, Davies is a good player, but there just wasn't a lot of support up top in the final third for them. The defense played well. Hedges gets a goal, a huge, huge, huge game-winning goal, I thought. What impressed you?
And he hit it in off his formerly concussed head. So kind of a little bit of irony there that he was out, may not have played because he hurt his head, and then he hits the ball into the net for the winner with his head.
Hedges might be becoming a dad, but he might not remember it. So,
I just thought of this one. Hedges. I'm sorry, you were saying before I...
Yeah, well, no, I was saying the set pieces with Hedges. I think that it was 2016... I think it was 2016, the season we won Supporters Shield. Hedges had like 6 goals or something, some absurd number for a central defender. And if you looked at like the top scorers for FC Dallas when we were going into last season, they were like, oh, Matt Hedges is in like the top 3 or top 5. So that being said, it's good to see Hedges get on the score sheet, get on the end of that. I know that... FC Dallas isn't always known for having set pieces like that. Where you're used to breaking on the counter, playing down the flanks, down the wings, really hitting people hard where they're weakest. But you know, if you're going to be able to get them against a team like that, Vancouver is really playing shorthanded because they don't have Tim Parker, the center defender they brought in from New York, who really has been a very good MLS defender throughout his career. So it's pretty impressive that they were able to come out of there with 3 points, especially as we all know going into that. I think there was talk all around before the match about how good of an opportunity it was for FC Dallas to pick up some points when everybody else around them is dropping points. So I was glad to see that, because rarely does something happen where everyone around you that kind of needs to lose for you to kind of get into that position where you're going to be able to clinch a playoff position earlier in the season than you would expect to. What rarely does that all come into play? And sure enough, it went into play and they're able to clinch. I think there's a scenario they could clinch this weekend. Is that right?
Yeah, it's
there's a few things that have to
happen. I don't remember the exact scenarios. But basically, they have to win or draw, and then two other teams have to draw or lose. One of two other teams. If those two teams both win, then we have to go to another week. But, you know, we're pretty much already
right
there.
No, I think you're right. Basically, there's a lot more that has to happen for us not to make the playoffs than for us to make the playoffs. So that's a good thing to have.
Sure. Yeah. One of the things during this game that kind of stuck out to me, and you kind of touched on it with the set pieces just a second ago, if I might hearken us back to earlier in the conversation, I don't know that I can think of a game in this season where the number of corners has been so lopsided in FC Dallas's favor. We had 12 corners to their 5.
Yeah, that's a big... there used to be like a debate that, like, instead of penalties, they should do like corners or something to like make it more competitive and force teams to be more attacking. No need to do that in this match. We played really well keeping the front foot on the pedal. I mean, that's it's not usually our strong suit because we don't typically play with the target man. I thought Cole Mon, that was, I guess, the unique thing. If anybody wants to say, like, what's the big headline? Was Cole Mon starting? What's the big headline or the byline after that headline is, well, he didn't do a whole lot. He did earn a call up to the national team for Paraguay, but if you look at Paraguayan strikers, there's not a whole lot to call up. So that's not necessarily what I would say is the takeaway. I think the takeaway was the guys down the middle or guys down the wings were such a good threat. Barrios was playing really well. Mosquero came in and just tore things up. And obviously Rudy had a great match. So going forward, I think FC Dallas is really strong. It's at the back that you want to make sure that if you listen to our interview that we have later on with Steve Davis, he kind of talks about some of his concerns heading into the playoffs. And I think he's right. We've got to make sure that we keep a tight back line, keep clean sheets, because ultimately we're going to start facing some more consistent attacking talent once we get into a playoff run. So that's kind of my takeaway, was everything that's been working well for us has worked well, and nothing that was working well didn't work well, so to speak. That's this oversimplification, but it shows that the team's head's on straight, because at this time last year, FC Dallas fans were ripping their shirts in the middle of the streets of Frisco, screaming bloody murder. So crying out, why God me? And as our playoff chances just dwindled. So
yeah, I think the defense actually played pretty well that game. I think we did a good job dealing with threats. It was that one really awesome move by Davies to get down the wing and send a cross in, and mm-hmm. Kamara, he was just taller than Ziegler, and that was it. Like, there wasn't much that could be done there besides that. So, I think that height is maybe a concern. Hedges is tall, but Ziegler is not really that tall. And there's really not that a whole whole lot of tall players on our team. I mean, I think that does kind of highlight one of our potential weaknesses going forward, but overall a good team defense, good team play all around. It was very entertained by that match and screamed very loudly when Hedges scored the goal.
Yeah, it was quite a good. And we almost got a third too with Bartos there at the end, with their goalkeeper trying to just play crazy. So I felt like the team really was hitting on all cylinders, which is good to see. I would caution every time that we have a win like this to not, I mean, it's going far, but Sunday match, but hopefully this weekend we're able to kind of keep everything rolling, so to speak, in terms of maybe we're going to have a little change up top. I don't think Coleman probably gets a start this weekend, but I could see a Rudy. I mean, he's going back up to Portland where he used to play before he came to Dallas. So hopefully he's a little bit motivated. It's been kind of dreary weather here in North Texas for the past almost week now. So it's very, and they were in Vancouver too. So it's very much Northwest feel. They'll have been training in muggy-ish conditions. I think you'll still see the turf play a role as it always does.
Yeah, that's what I was about to bring up, is that we won in Vancouver despite it being turf.
Yeah.
And then we just keep that rolling right into this week, and that's just carry on that turf feeling.
That's right. So we'll see. I think it'll be I think we still get a win. Just I'm confident. It's hard this when we get rolling, we get rolling. And so I think we'll be playing really well. I will be interested to see who he starts up top. Maybe Tesho gets some time. Maybe he sticks with Coleman. Who knows? It's all Parejo's had a busy week for obvious reasons. If everybody wants to jump into rumors, we're not really a news breaking show. So if you're just now listening and curious, we don't really do news so much as we do analysis. So like we assume you've heard that our coach was rumored but really didn't interview for the U.S. national team job. That's why we're not talking about it.
But maybe he had a phone call.
Right.
We don't know.
Right. It's kind of silly. Everything about it is silly. And again,
but it's something to talk about.
Yeah. We talked to Jason about it, but to Steve about it. So go ahead and listen to that after we get done with this piece of the show. But if you watch the Portland match this weekend, I would go ahead and look for key things to look for would be who we play up top, what type of formation we go with. Are we going to play a similar type of style? And is Reggie Cannon ever going to get a break? I guess not. I mean, that's fine. He's playing well, but I think it's kind of funny that whole will Reggie ever rest, which it doesn't sound like he will. So that's okay.
I had forgotten that he was still trucking along and had without a break.
Yep. He just keeps going. So,
youth.
That's right. That's right.
Like I needed a break after I walked from my desk to the coffee machine, but you know,
are you one of those people that takes an elevator?
It depends. If I've just got done playing basketball, then it's totally the elevator. But in the mornings and then going home, I take the stairs.
Well, going home, you're walking downstairs.
That's what you think.
How would you not? You work in a basement? Interesting. Justin's a Milton, guys.
Get my stapler.
That's right.
All right. Well.
And on that note.
On that note, you've heard him on ESPN Soccer Today. You've seen him and listened to him talk about FC Dallas on the game we just watched in Vancouver and all season long on FC Dallas TV. Here coming up is our interview or our chat with Steve Davis. Howdy, Steve. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Happy to be here. Always happy to talk soccer.
For sure. If somebody in our audience doesn't have an idea who you are, why don't we start off talking a little bit about how you got to be the one the broadcast team for FC Dallas TV and on ESPN Soccer Today.
You guys want to talk about me? You say you promised we were going to come here and talk about interesting things.
Well,
I should have gotten that in writing.
we're dirty liars.
Clearly. man, I was with the Dallas Morning News for a while, and soccer was the sport that I kind of grew up playing. And so I, even though I was pretty young writer at the time, they handed me soccer and said, "You just do what you want with it." And that was right about the time of the 1994 World Cup. So I was lucky enough to that was the first World Cup I covered for the Dallas Morning News, and ended up covering several of them until 2006. I was on a train from Hamburg to Frankfurt covering the 2006 World Cup when I got a call saying that Dallas Morning News was going to offer buyouts. And I already knew that I wanted to leave because I kind of saw the writing on the wall in the newspaper industry. Mm-hmm. And so right then and there, I thought, oh, well, they're gonna pay me a bunch of money to do what I wanted to do anyway. So went out on my own, worked for worked all freelance, worked for ESPN.com for a while. The editor there left to go to SI.com, and he took me with him. So I wrote for SI.com until about 2012. And I was also doing some other freelance stuff, writing for MLS Soccer back then as well. In 2012, NBC hired me to start NBC Pro Soccer Talk and be the lead writer there, which was great. Until a year later, when they decided they were no longer interested in U.S. and Major League Soccer because they went all in on on English Premier League, which I don't blame them as a business decision. So my role got reduced, and I just went back to being freelance and working for different people. And included in that package was FC Dallas Radio. I was their play-by-play guy, and then 2 years ago, I was doing a little bit of TV at the time, and then 2 years ago, I just kind of moved over. excuse me, guys, one booth and started doing more FC Dallas TV play-by-play or not play-by-play analysis alongside the play-by-play guy, usually Mark Followell. And that's it. Along the way, all those years ago for the Dallas Morning News, I was covering the Dallas Burn and covering Major League Soccer all those years, and kept covering it for ESPN and for SI and then Pro Soccer Talk. And now whoever wrote for 442 for a while until they decided to ditch their U.S. operation. So I, along with some other writers, we are the Grim Reapers. As we join these places and get hired, we effectively kill them off. That's it.
On second thought, I guess, Steve, we'll talk to you later.
Right. Exactly. You guys have no idea what you've done here.
Crap.
You can always pretend like this never happened, you know, and just get another scramble up another guest real quick for this week.
That's right. We'll bring on my mom.
You know, as you're telling that, I'm sitting here thinking how there seems to be a common theme amongst the old guard of soccer writers here in Dallas, or even Mark Followell. Like, everybody said, "Hey, we're working on this sports gig, but we like soccer." And so they said, "Hey, why don't you be our soccer guy?" It seems to be a common theme around here.
I don't think that's inaccurate at all. I think that's exactly right. And now I think it's a lot harder to do that because, as people move up through school and then graduate school, and now that, for the last few years and certainly now, I think there are plenty of people who know soccer and plenty of young journalists who were exposed to it at a young age. And even if they, even if they're not maybe huge soccer people, they're very familiar with the narratives in the game because they're just sports fans. And so it would be a lot harder to just kind of be the guy that kind of falls into the niche of being the soccer reporter, the soccer writer, whatever. But when I got into the business, of course, it was a lot easier to do that. And I think you're exactly right. That's how most people got into it, because they knew the sport at a different level at a time when not a lot of people did.
What other ways besides what you just mentioned, what other ways has the landscape changed in covering soccer from from 94 till now.
And it is so much more sophisticated, the coverage. It's so much more layered and deep. I mean, look at what you guys are doing. You know, I would have killed to have this type of information back in, after 94, into 96, 98, into the early 2000s. Today, as I prepare for the match coming up this week, Portland Timbers, FC Dallas, later tonight, I'm going to be on a Portland Timbers podcast, and I will be on that. But if I weren't on it, I would go listen to that later this week. And something like that was not available back then. So you really can the information available for you to scoop up is out there. And if you don't have the information now, that's on you, because it's certainly out there. Also, in terms of just what American soccer journalists know, you know, back in, you know, say 1998, if Bruce Arena had held a press conference, his first press conference, as he was named coach after the 98 World Cup U.S. disaster in France, he would have been asked a couple of good questions by a couple of good reporters out there who are, you know, working the game at the time, Stephen Goff, you know, for instance, or somebody like that, or some of those guys at Soccer America. But he would have been asked a lot of very elementary questions, some rudimentary questions, that just a level of journalism that I, not to disparage anybody, it just wouldn't have been a high level of journalism, if that makes sense. Whereas, you know, he could walk in and just throw some answers around, and you know, whether he's right or wrong, or, you know, if he could, he might have said something about, you know, four substitutes in a game, and maybe if Stephen Goff or somebody like that wasn't around, they wouldn't have caught it. But now, obviously, it's just such a more sophisticated level of writing and reporting, and whereas back then the questions being asked of these people were very elementary, you know, now there are actually people who will, you know, who will ask them nuanced questions about this guy's role in, you know, Santiago Mosquera, you know, his role on the left side versus, you know, when he comes inside more often, would he ever be a 10? Is he that kind of player? Or what did he play back in Colombia? Was he a withdrawn striker? Or, oh, we heard that he played on the left side, but now it looks like, you know, what he did for that team based on the personnel around him, he was more tucked inside as opposed to out and out winger. So you see what I'm saying? It's just a much, much more deeper understanding of the game, and then a deeper understanding of the way you can ask questions and report on the game, and the way you use information and advanced data analytics. And so it's just a different world completely.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't been around the game nearly as long as you, like just since the early, as mid 2000s, and the articles that you, if you could get articles in the paper or on a website back then, you know, you were lucky. So yeah, it's good to have all that information.
I think there was a really good podcast at World Soccer Daily that was on Sirius. And then they started going to a podcast format, but that was like the only soccer show that wasn't just mashed up every now and then. Maybe once a week you would get a good one, unless you wanted to get like The Guardian. But they used to talk about how in like the early 90s, you would be lucky if the New York Times Sunday, or I guess it would be Monday edition, had the box scores to the Premier League, maybe in the very, very back of the
sports. That's about right.
And now you can watch literally any match basically in the world from America just with a cable subscription.
You know, and you're right. It's not like it was total prehistoric days. I mean, I'm thinking back even those early 90s. You know, I was watching Dutch soccer games on ESPN. It was back when ESPN needed programming and that kind of programming. They weren't into all the talk shows yet. So, you know, there were always Mexican games on that, you know, even way back then that you could watch. And so it's not like it was a total dark ages. And the thing is that the journalism was different, but there were games. There were always Champions League games on, for instance. So if you were a soccer head, you know, you could definitely watch it, and you could go to bars, and it was actually a different experience. It was communal, you know, go to the bars on Saturday mornings to watch the English Premier League game. So it's not like you couldn't go out there and watch soccer and observe and, you know, and fill your head with information, it was a lot harder to find. It's not like you can do now where you just, you can literally sit around in your underwear and you know, go figure out whatever you want to watch. And you want to tactically break down the Vancouver Whitecaps. You know, there's plenty of stuff out there to go watch on them. So not like it was a total dark ages, but it's a lot easier to find a lot more information now.
Let's go ahead and switch gears a little bit. It's been kind of a news, heavy news week for FC Dallas. We've had some, he said, she said going on the U.S. men's national team front. As far as did Oscar Pareja interview for the head coaching job or didn't he? I think that we'll just leave that question there, but I'd like to get your thoughts on A, if you think Oscar would be a good fit for that job, and B, what happens to FC Dallas if he leaves?
So I guess we can start here now. As we're recording this, I haven't been out to practice this week. I plan to go tomorrow morning and speak to, you know, I'll talk to Oscar as I do whenever I go out to practice. I did kind of just chat with him a couple of weeks ago and just kind of informally about, you know, I told him we talked on our soccer show, ESPN Soccer Today. I said that we had a little talk the other day about why his name wasn't coming up a little bit more. And we were just chatting about it. And he just said, Stevie, you know, we got to win here. That's all he said. That's all I'm thinking about. And that's the other stuff takes care of itself. So you kind of start there. And the day all that came out, somebody from U.S. Soccer called me and said, hey, do you know these guys at Aldea? And, do you have contacts at the Morning News? Maybe we could call, because they didn't know if they wanted to get into it officially, but they were trying to let people know, as you know, kind of quietly, that it didn't happen. And again, I haven't talked to Oscar, but they were saying, you know, my first question was, why in the world would U.S. Soccer go to Vancouver to interview Oscar Pareja? I mean, they have planes that fly to Dallas too, and so that didn't make any sense.
Well, it's prettier there.
I'm not going to argue with you on that. And Vancouver is a beautiful city, so yes, you're absolutely right about that. Maybe, but anyway, I haven't talked to Oscar yet, but I don't think that's happened. So we start there. Would Oscar Pareja be a good coach for the national team? What I said on the radio show a couple of weeks ago, and Mark Followell and I were talking about it before the before we got started the other night with the Vancouver match. I just said I'm just surprised that his name isn't coming up a little bit more, because you know the names that we hear it's Berhalter and Vermees, Jesse Marsh, and I understand why, but none of those guys were back-to-back 60-point season winners. Only one coach has ever done that in Major League Soccer. If and it goes without saying, I guess, if you just kind of follow the math, that if they get 60 points again this year, he'll be the first coach ever to get three times in 4 years. So at a team that spends moderately, you know, so I think that's right. That's a huge accomplishment. If the fear was that these things are all about timing, you know, who gets kind of mentioned for these jobs. If the fear was that 2017, they had the second half season collapse. Well, what I said was, look, Greg Berhalter had a collapse. The whole 2016 season, it was a collapse. You know, if you go back and look at their team that year. So I don't really think that should be a factor. So anyway, what I'm getting at here, he's got experience in the U.S. soccer system back when he was with the under 17s. He definitely has a reputation. Who could argue that he is successful in working with young players? And I think in this particular World Cup cycle, that's going to be very valuable to whoever it is. I think he needs to be a guy. The coach needs to be somebody that is good with working with young players. So I think he should be part of the conversation. The only there's this little thing in the back of my head that says, I don't know yet. I'm not saying he wouldn't be good at it, but we just don't know how Oscar would be at dealing with big star, big ego guy. And I don't know how many of those guys are going to be around in this U.S. soccer World Cup cycle, but it is a question because he's not had to work with a lot of those guys with FC Dallas. You know, their top end stars are still young guys or kind of, you know, mid level players, you know, your Maxi Rudis or whatever. So in other words, he's never had to deal with, the Tim Howards, the Brad Guzan, to them, but Jozy Altidore, to the Michael Bradleys. Again, not saying that he couldn't. He just hasn't had that type of player in the locker room. So that would be my only that would be the only caveat there. And then as far as like what happens with FC Dallas, I don't know. I think it's a bit early to be talking about that.
Not going to speculate as to like how that would affect the team or anything.
How it would affect the team? Well, yeah, I mean, yes, you certainly. Look, I think Oscar Pareja, and I'm not just saying this because I've known the guy forever. I think he's a gem. I think the best piece of business Dan Hunt ever did with FC Dallas was to go get Oscar Pareja out of Colorado. And remember, I'm thinking back now. Did he get cited for sort of tampering there? Did they have to? I shouldn't.
It was a little bit of a very convenient situation. Did they have to give?
Did they have to give Colorado something for that, or am I making that up? Or was that the?
I don't remember if they had the, but I do remember it was pretty. I mean, it was like leaving Colorado, moving to Dallas, like it pretty happened very quickly. I do know that, so it did look pretty. Like they were tapping him up.
Yeah, I think there's something that I just can't remember this right off the top of my head. I'll go back and look at it, but there was something about all that, the timing where he didn't. I think the deal was that he did not re-sign with Colorado. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate, but there was something in there. Anyway, best piece of business Dan Hunt ever did was to go get Oscar Pareja, and I just think that what he does. I think he does more with less, better than any coach out there. And what I've always said, going back to 2016, when Dallas was very, very good, but if you look at it, they weren't killing people. They weren't Atlanta. Every time they walked out on the field, you knew they had a very good chance of controlling the game and winning 2-0. Whereas every time Atlanta walks out on the field, you know, if the other team isn't at the top of its game, Atlanta's going to win 4-1. And, Dallas never had that roster. What I always said was FC Dallas has a good roster. They don't have a great roster. 2016, they won 2 trophies. They did not have a great roster. It was a good roster. And a lot of that was just Oscar and drilling the team in the right ways, the right kind of pattern play, not putting players in positions that they were where they couldn't succeed, knowing exactly what the team's limitations, the individual limitations, not asking them to do things that were outside of the comfort zone that way, the way he built the team physically, the load cycles, deload cycles, what he calls micro cycles. If you go back to his first year at in 2014, at the end of the season, he told me, he said, I asked him about all the injuries, and he said, Steve, I'll raise my hand. That's my fault. He said, we needed to go through that. We pushed the players very, very hard physically. And we knew that we were risking a lot of injury, but I needed these players, this group of players, to understand what it takes at this level. And we knew we just had to push the club through that. We'll be better off in the long run for it, I think. But all the injuries this year, that was my fault because we put a heavy, heavy load on them. Anyway, the point is, yes, the answer to the question is absolutely it would affect this team, this club, if Oscar Pareja weren't to be here.
Gotcha.
Just not that many Oscar Pareja out there.
No, there's not. I think you're right. He's like kind of the glue that holds a lot of what's a good infrastructure, not a great infrastructure, not a great squad, but a very good squad. Yeah. He's the glue that holds that together. And I think you're right. Him leaving would really set things back. I think that you're right about the big talents or big name players not being something he's really had to deal with at either of his stops as a head coach. I think this U.S. next generation of U.S. national teams, they're probably a pretty humble bunch because obviously they didn't qualify for a World Cup. So what a way to announce your arrival as the next great hope of American soccer. Yeah. But at the same time, I think Oscar's, even if he was offered it, I would see him even saying, I kind of have a good gig here. Whereas there's a lot of pressure on the next person to be the national team coach.
Yeah.
He'll definitely be a fan favorite if he took it, but the criticism I saw was he doesn't have a style, which I don't know if I agree with. I think he's, like you said, he's very drilled, plays the situation really well. We saw it this weekend. We've seen it in weekends past where he does something different, but you can tell that he drilled them that way and it worked out. So,
yeah, I don't know that I really agree that he doesn't have a style. It may not be the style that a lot of people want to see.
Right.
But, you know, clearly what I saw with the team in 2016 and when they were a little bit better in 17 and when they're on their game 2018 is just the style is that you control the game. You manage the game by absorbing pressure, funneling people into places you want them to go, and then you're hitting on the counter from there, and trying to score on set pieces. As long as you have somebody like Michelle or you know Mauro Diaz when he was better at it, or Kellen Acosta or whatever to put put balls in the right places on set pieces.
Or Maxi or Rudy,
Maxi Rudy. Who knew all that? So I don't really know that I quite agree on the style question.
Right. Yep. No, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Ball, the ball is on the ground. They're overloading one side. They, they're attacking through, but it's the style is looking at exactly what you have and then trying to, exploit the best of the player's abilities, if that makes sense. So the style would be a little bit fluid based on what you have at your disposal.
Right. Yep, I think that's right. He's been able to. I think it's interesting. We had on Carter last weekend, and we talked to him about how if any other team basically changed over almost 50% of their starting 11, like FC Dallas has done in mid-season, and then reorganized where they were putting their top striker, most teams would kind of be like they're a reset or it's a rebuild or however you want to use an American sports term for it. But FC Dallas has just kept on chugging and kept on picking up points here and there, getting a good road win, getting draws when they need them, and just trying to stay out of the loss column basically. And it's worked out solid for them. And it's very, it goes to show the infrastructure and Oscar's role in that. So
yeah,
I agree.
I think infrastructure is a great word. And I think it's not just the vertical infrastructure through the club from the reserve, from the youth up through the, reserve team or whatever you call the reserves. And I think infrastructure in what they do on the field, I always go back to something Victor Ulloa told me one time back when Carlos Carrizo came in. And Victor Ulloa said, I know they're trying to replace me. That's okay. He said, wait till he comes in and tries to figure out how to play defensive midfielder under Oscar. It's like, he wants you to be there, but now be there. And also watch this. And now you have to be here. And when that ball goes there, you have to be there. He's like, it's very hard to play for Oscar in that position. But I think it's hard to play for Oscar in all the positions because there is an infrastructure in the way they play. Like I said a while ago, there's the pattern of movements, are really well rehearsed. And it may not always look like it because, the other team's playing too. But I think they have a real infrastructure with the way they play on the field too.
The irony there is that Ulloa and Grezo have formed quite the partnership this season.
No question. And I still think that they're a little too similar. And I think they're still kind of working that out. And if Santi Mosquera can be what he was the other day, which is a really creative influence from the left side, I think that helps a lot. But I do think that if they're a much better team, when one of those two can provide a little more drive and a few more late runs into the penalty area, think about it. It's something that Kellen Acosta did real well that neither Grezo or Ulloa, they're always thinking more defensive. They don't want to make that late run into the penalty area because their defensive mindset says, well, yeah, but if I make that run, who's back here protecting against the counter?
Right.
And so to have two guys like that is a little problematic, but right now Oscar's looking at his roster and again saying, I'm not going to ask one of those guys to go be a little bit more of an eight than he's really comfortable with. I'm just going to have to work with, these are two players I need on the field right now. And if they don't provide us quite as much push into the opposition penalty area, we're just going to have to work with that. We're going to have to live with it and work with what we have. So yeah, you're absolutely right. They're both playing well right now. It would help FC Dallas I think if they just had one more player, or if Pablo Aránguiz, you know, could develop a little bit more and could play ahead of them, then it wouldn't be a problem. But
we have some listener questions about him coming up here in a bit.
Well, let's keep going then.
Yeah. We were talking about Ulloa and Grezo playing so well together. And the other day when Grezo was out and Hayes was in, there's quite a bit of talk about Jacory Hayes and his development and what's happened to him this season, and just kind of a general talk about him being a young American player. And you chimed in and said, hey, Grezo and Hayes are the same age. You should remember that whenever you're talking about the young American or young Hayes being young.
Well, so the context for that, just to be clear about it,
sure,
is that I believe somebody was there was a conversation on Twitter. Correct me, you guys, if I'm wrong, but there was a conversation on Twitter about Oscar not playing young players, not putting, you know, those youngsters on the field, and Jacory Hayes was held up as an example of, you know, see, he's not, you know, he's not. Right now he's not trusting the young guys. And I was like, hey everybody, Carlos Grezo is the same age. So don't, you know, we can certainly have a discussion about the question you just asked, or we'd have a discussion about any of this stuff. But I was just trying to provide the extra information, the extra context, that stop saying, you know, stop using Jacory Hayes as an example. When the guy taken largely responsible for taking his minutes, you know, you can say it to Yo or Grezo, whatever, but it's the same age.
Right.
So he's just better right now. That's just all there is to it. Jacory is an interesting one because I two quick things about Jacory. I asked Oscar about 3 weeks ago, you know, let's talk about Jacory. And he kind of put his hand up on a wall, and then he did this thing where he did a kind of a big wave. If you can see a finger kind of going up and down in a big wave, he says, when college players, a lot of times this is what they are. And in other words, he was, you know, showing ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs. Mm-hmm. He said, that's what you get from college players. A lot of times it's not Jacory's fault. It's just kind of the system. And now he's in a pro system. It's a different level. And then he started making smaller waves as he's traced his finger along the wall. And he said, you know, we think Jacory is now here. He's going to have ups and downs, not as many. He's more consistent. And then he made really small waves, almost like a straight line. He says, he said, it's our responsibility to get him here, you know, to get him where a professional player needs to be, to where you don't have big ups and downs. You more or less have a consistent level of performance. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first thing about Jacory. The other thing is, I just think, Tyler Kern and I talked about this on our show a few weeks back. I think what's happened with Jacory is that when he came in originally, he was asked, hey, go be what you are. Go win the ball. If you remember the game that he got, you know, where he's doing so well last year, I think it was against the Red Bulls, and for 20 minutes he was winning everything. And then he got thrown out because he silly second yellow card or whatever. And then early this year he was that player, bounce around, win balls, find Mauro Diaz, win the ball, find Mauro, you know, where, you know, find somebody else. Is just easy pass. So then, once they started adding to his responsibilities, I think he got a lot of things in his head, and it goes back. Remember what I told you about Victor Ulloa and what he told me about playing that position for Oscar. Now people are telling him, okay, watch this, but be aware of that. And when that ball goes here, you've got to be there. But of course, if it recirculates here, you got to be back here. Now he looks like a player who's got all this stuff in his head. He's trying to think, and sometimes I can't remember which match it was, but I remember watching he and Victor were playing together side by side, but it was Jacory kind of standing in the middle while Victor almost comic book like kind of ping pong back and forth around him. He'd be left, he'd be right, he'd be left, he'd be right, and Jacory was always in the middle, and it looked to me like he was just a guy kind of paralysis by analysis. He just
was that the New York City game.
Which one?
The New York City game?
It was not that one. One he just got dispossessed a couple of times. But it was. I'd have to go back and see. It was his last start. And he wasn't playing poorly. You could just see that Victor just understood and reacted quicker, read the situations better, whereas Jacory, it looked like he was thinking a little bit. It was just having to think about it a little bit. Now, you know, I never ask about it. It could have been that tactically Oscar said, Ja'Cory, sit in the middle. Let Vic go out and handle these situations. It could have been that, but it looked to me like it just looked classic. Young guy comes in. They just kind of let him be a free and be a player, but then they start saying, okay, now we're going to add responsibilities to you. We're going to put a few more responsibilities on your plate, and now he's got a bunch of things in his head, and he can't just be the player that goes around and wins balls. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting as I watched that game that day. And I think he'll get there. And he's a guy that he's a good kid and he wants to learn. He's a smart kid. So they've got something there. And, you know, it's nice that they have it. And it'd be great if they had a USL team where they could get him a few more games.
Supposedly, we're going to have one. But crickets, right? Do you know something we don't?
I do not. I read and hear the same things you did. But look, I've got a lot of experience in American soccer, and I'll say the same thing about USL teams and that I always said about stadiums. As we hear, you know, stadiums, all those years we heard about a stadium in D.C. and that, you know, now a stadium in Miami. What I always say about these things is when they put a shovel in the ground, you tap me on the shoulder. I don't want to hear about it until, right. You know, everybody has plans. Everybody has ambition. But until, and same thing with the USL team, you know, I know the club wants to do it, but you know, figuratively speaking, when they put a shovel in the ground, you let me know because otherwise I don't believe it.
I guess we have to call it the USL championship now.
It looks like it, huh?
Yeah. Please don't sue us for, if you're listening to USL,
we can still call it whatever we want, guys. It's okay. And generally speaking, you know, you refer to people and organizations the way they ask you to. That's it's courtesy, but they cannot make us we call it whatever we want.
Just don't call it the second division.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's shift gears one more time. Let's talk about ending the season and the playoffs. So unless something drastically terribly goes wrong, we're going to make the playoffs. Looking at FC Dallas's roster and kind of the other teams in the mix, if you had to make a prediction on how far FC Dallas goes in the playoffs, how deep do you think we go?
I think right now FC Dallas is a good team. I don't know that they're a great team. I don't know that they've got a super deep playoff run in them. That said, as long as San Jose is not playing in the playoffs, they are a very good team at home. We know that they can be a good team on the road. They've actually got a very good road record. So it's going to depend on a couple of things. What kind of matchups they get, who else is hot at the time. You know, a week ago, we would have thought, oh, heavens, if anybody faces Seattle, you know, you're going to have a short playoff run. Now, Seattle, especially, if, you know, depending on Chad Marshall's health, they look pretty vulnerable. So it depends on matchups. It also depends on just keeping one guy hot. Is it going to be Mosquera, who I thought really had, in addition to the goal, I thought he had a really good game the other night. He looks a little more fit. Finally, you know, we saw I made it two or three important tackles. We saw a little bit more interest in playing defense, which is nice. He's not out there to play defense, but you have to try sometimes. And he did the other day. I thought he was easily the most creative player. So now you got that going on. If Roland Lamont can beat this little quad, hip flexor, whatever it is, injury that he has, now you'll have about seven guys to choose from between these four positions. That's going to foster a little bit of competition and maybe – somebody gets hot off that. Or, you know, maybe it's Michael Barros. He's been very good lately. If you can just maybe if he can push himself just a little bit to just the next level still, you get one of those guys. I think they need that because I think they've got a pretty good back line. And I guess beyond that, it's about Jesse Gonzalez. Jesse's got to be a little bit closer to the player that we saw in that big match that he had against Toronto back on his birthday. Earlier this year, you know, making unbelievable saves and doing all the right things. And he can't be the guy that we saw against San Jose, you know, taking a runabout and, you know, losing a goal that way and then letting a ball kind of trickle by his left leg. He can't be that guy. it just comes down to those things, because quite frankly, just speaking very honestly, Dallas has small margins. You know, they have to have a lot of things going right. Somebody hot on offense. They can't have a big injury to one of the center backs, right, to Ziegler or Matt Hedges. And they have to have Jesse Gonzalez playing at a high level. Didn't really answer your question there. I just said the factors that it's gonna depend on.
So quarterfinals, semifinals?
Yeah, look, I think they've got a pretty good shot now, especially after those three road points were so important the other day. They got a pretty good shot at finishing in one of those top two spots. You get the bye. But you know, we've also seen that you can come out of position 3-4 and make the MLS Cup, yep. Cup final. It's much harder, and it's still a small sample in the current format. But in the current format, nobody's come from 5 or 6. You can come from 3 or 4. Teams have done that. You can certainly come from 1 or 2. So my point is, if they get a bye, I can definitely see them winning that next round. If they get position 3 or 4, they're going to play a home game. And we know they've got a very good home record and have had a very good home record under Oscar Pereja. They could easily win that one. Now, do I see them going to the conference finals and winning there? That may be where they kind of reach their level. Even then, you know, they've got a good team. They've got a good coach. And right now, you know, I don't really see – do you guys see a team in the West that you say, oh, that team's got it right now? I don't really know that I see that team. Again, it would have been Seattle a week ago, but I don't think I see that team now. So why not?
Yeah, everybody looks pretty vulnerable at times.
I think I was listening to you guys after the match on Sunday, and I think y'all kind of brought up the point that could a team get hot and go on a quick run? Sure, but that team doesn't really look to be stepping
right.
up.
Right.
And so that makes it so that it's pretty clear that as long as FC Dallas plays well at home and protects or gets a good lead that they can protect on the road, they can afford to maybe have a 1-0 or 2-1 loss on a road. But if you've got a 3-0 or even more goal lead going into the final match or going into that, that's the advantage.
Yeah, I would agree.
That consistency. Yep. So.
Excellent. All right. Well, sorry to have pressed there, but we
want
to
know. No, that's fine. Sorry to have danced so much.
No, it's a complicated. I mean, MLS playoffs are funny. They're a weird. I mean, it's not all the time that the team that's the best throughout the season, as FC Dallas has seen, wins the league. So
absolutely right.
You always have that hanging over yourself or over a team that there's a lot of pressure on you to not just make the playoffs, but then do well once you get there.
No, look, the truth is, you and I, we can all have a more informed conversation in 3 or 4 weeks as we get a little closer to the playoffs, as we see who's healthy. Look, 2 years ago, we would have had a conversation before that late season match against Seattle that would have sounded very different mm-hmm. than the conversation about the playoffs we would have had after that match, when we knew that Mauro Diaz had blown out his Achilles, right? Because again, it's a club that has small margins. So we can all sit here and talk about the playoffs right now without knowing who gets the bye, who gets the home games and the knockout round. But you know, until you know those things, it's just difficult to have and just know who's a hot team, because form comes and goes. Look at Portland. Portland was all that. For the summer, they wanted that long unbeaten run, and you know, after that, all of a sudden they just fall off the table and they can't win a game, especially as Diego Chara. You know, if he can't regain his health, they're just a different team. So, So the whole point is, you know, form does vary and sometimes wildly, and so it's just hard to sit here in late September and kind of predict who's going to do well in the playoffs, because honestly, we can do that, but we're just guessing.
Right. No, I'd agree. I'd completely agree. I do know. I think the East is going to be a bloodbath.
You're right about that.
It's going to be brutal. Whoever comes out of that, it's going to be a really interesting, fun. I'm assuming most of those matches are on before the Western ones, but I'm going to be watching those because that's going to be some intense setups, especially with Atlanta down there just lurking, just waiting.
Yeah, just wait, just so. Waiting and hoping somebody like Columbus doesn't come in there and Zach Steffen them like he did last year. Yep. It's going to be great. I always think that the MLS is kind of funny this way, that they point to the playoffs all year. You know, they make it all about these playoff runs, and they've had a high percentage of teams that make the playoffs because that's the way the MLS owners have always wanted it. They always want to point to the playoffs, make a big deal about these playoff races. But then they start the playoffs like 3 days later, and literally you all season you pointed the playoffs, you pointed your league toward the playoffs, and literally 3 days into it, 1/3 of the teams are eliminated. And so I always think it's funny that there's just no real chance to really kind of build that momentum, because I love the MLS playoffs. And I would love to have a week to sit around and go on shows like this and look at the matchups. But you don't really get that. And by the way, the teams don't really get a chance to sell those games because they literally happen 3 days after that final Sunday regular season match. And then, by the way, if you win, you get another match 3 days later that some other team doesn't really get to sell because they don't know, you know, who's playing where. So anyway, it's just kind of funny that sometimes people talk about the MLS playoffs being too long, and sometimes I think they're too short because I love them.
Yeah. No, it's good. They get pretty exciting. So,
all right. Well, if you've got time for some listener questions, we've got a couple to shoot your way.
Let's do it. Got to do it quick. I got to jump on another podcast here, but I'm sorry. I probably my fault. I probably rambled too much.
No worries. Okay, so we'll skip ahead to the ones that we teased earlier about Arangues. On the FC Dallas fans Facebook page, Chase Tripp and Chadrick Arnold ask, basically, do you agree with Oscar's strategy to bed Arangues in slowly and deliberately over time?
Hey, man, I've stood next to that guy. They list him at 143 pounds. If that's the truth, it is after a full meal. I promise you that. That dude is small. He's a nice kid, man, and I think he's going to be a heck of a player, but he is tiny. And they need to, he needs to eat a few meals with me because get on a beans and taters diet, something, because they've got to put a little man muscle on him. And by the way, everybody thinks that Mauro Diaz was a young player as he got into FC Dallas, and he developed just fine, right? Okay, when Mauro Diaz got into FC Dallas, he was 22. So they took kind of the slow approach, and it worked out just fine, right? Arangues is 21. And again, I think he's got a big personality. I think he's going to do great. But yeah, I do think it's the right idea. Oscar always takes the long game. He plays the long game on everything. And I think it's the right way to do it with Arangues too.
Excellent. Doug Gallimore asks, he was asking about Mo Hernandez and the possibility of pulling him back for the playoffs. If you see that happening, and kind of like what is the strategy with Mo bringing in Mo Hernandez?
Well, you know, the other day down in San Antonio, he got a red card, and you know, that's one of the reasons that he just didn't work out in Dallas. And you know, generally speaking, Oscar told me a long time ago, I will work with a young player to the point that I think he's still absorbing information. And now we weren't talking about Moses Hernandez at the time. But we were just talking generally. He said, as long as a player is absorbing information, developing, learning, I'm willing to work with him. I'm willing to let him make mistakes, and we'll keep working with him. You know, as long as they have the talent, obviously. Well, I think what happened with Moses is they got to this point where they're like, we keep telling Moses certain things. And you know, if you remember watching him play, there were sequences where I knew what Oscar wanted him to do, and he just didn't do it. He did something else. And there's a couple of times there's one game where late he lost him some points with a penalty kick that tackle he didn't need to make. And there was a couple of cards in there he didn't need to get. And so I think that's where Oscar said, okay, he's just not listening to us anymore. He needs to go out there and figure out what's out there. So they release him. Now they bring him back. But now he goes to San Antonio, and I hear that it was kind of a bad tackle the other day, and he got himself thrown out. And I'm like, oh, is that the same old Moses? I didn't see it, so I don't. Maybe I don't mean to be talking out of school here, but I don't know that that's a good move to bring him back. You know, if that's
it was a pretty petulant talent challenge.
Is that, so did you see it? Challenge.
Yeah, I was actually watching that game.
Yeah, no. So you know better than me.
Yeah, he just he went after a guy and kicked him after he'd already kicked the booted the ball up the field.
Okay, well, let me ask you then. So is that the guy that you want out there when you know, with it all on the line?
No.
Okay. so there you go. Again, yeah, you know, and I don't mean to talk badly about the guy, but you got to be, it's part of the game. You got to be professional. You got to have a clear head about these things. You can't do that stuff. Not if you want to win. Not if you want your organization to win.
No, you're right. It's a huge red flag. So makes sense. He's not in the team.
I mean, maybe he learns. I would have thought he would have learned. You know, he went out there and now they bring him back. They get him in training, and now they talked about playing center back. But what you want is for the guy to say, okay, I went out there and I figured out that, you know, things down in Guatemala and things in other parts of the world, man, they're not the same. And you come back and you look at it and you say, you know, these facilities are pretty good here. These stadiums we play in are pretty good. And by the way, the checks always come twice a month. Well, it's not always the case in some of these other places. So you would have thought he would have come back and said, you know, I thought it was all one of these prodigal son things. I thought it was all out there for me, but I figured out it was pretty good right here at home. But apparently it's not kicked in that way.
All right. Well, you can see Steve or hear Steve and see Steve at on the FC Dallas TV broadcasts and now in expanded market. And you can hear him.
We're regional, man. We're regional.
Yeah. You got to get viewers in before Austin FC starts taking share.
I like it. Yep.
And then you can hear him on ESPN Soccer today. Anything else you want to plug before you head out?
You can find me on Twitter at SteveDavis90. You know what the 90 is? The 90? You guys get it?
No, I was actually wondering that today.
God, I thought when I got that, you know, of course, you know, you get your Twitter handle and Steve Davis has, you know, gone 17 different ways. But I'm like 90 minutes. Everybody will get that. Nobody gets it. I was going to say that,
but it seemed like the obvious answer.
everybody looks at me and says, "So you were born in 1990?" There, you can see the wheel turning. Oh, like, that doesn't make sense. Yeah.
That's funny.
No, your Twitter, Steve Davis 90.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Steve.
Always fun, guys. Anytime.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. You're listening to the Dallas Soccer Show with Dustin Nation and Tristan Vick.
All right. That was a great conversation. I enjoyed hearing the history of Dallas soccer coverage here in the Dallas area. From the past, I don't know, 25, 30 years.
Indeed. Yes. So definitely thank you to Steve for coming on. I don't know how it's, I was telling him before we started recording, I don't know how we've been doing this show for almost a year and a half, a season and a half, and haven't had him on, but he's come on now and we can't say that anymore. So thanks again, Steve. And that'll do it for this episode of the Dallas Soccer Show. Please, you know what? I'm going to get on soapbox for a second before we close out here. I got on Apple Podcast app because I am a podcast listener. I listen to several soccer shows about FC Dallas. I just happened to do an Apple Podcast search for FC Dallas. And the first episode or the first show that comes up is Steve Davis and Tyler Kern's awesome ESPN Soccer Today. But then it was about four or five pages until we got to the next FC Dallas podcast. And then six pages until you got to the other active, this would be the 19th. So that was us on the fifth page. And the sixth page was the 19th minute. In between there were shows for teams for almost every single other team in the league. Whenever you do a search for FC Dallas. So If you would, let's right this wrong and go into iTunes and find each one of those FC Dallas shows, whether it be the Kick Around or ESPN Soccer Today, or the 19th Minute, or us, any of your favorite FC Dallas content. Subscribe and then give a review so that we can get us all ranking higher, so that people looking for FC Dallas content can find it better and more easily. So That is my soapbox, and I will step down now. But that being said, please go to iTunes and subscribe and give us a review. You can find us on Twitter at Dallas Soccer Show with no E. And we will catch you guys next time. Take it easy, Tristan.
See ya.